Welcome to Living in Beauty. It's Sunday, December 4th, 2022, day 2330 on the road, and we're back in California. Long, dusty roads. Midnight sun. Thick wildfire smoke. Rivers rising to the breaking point. Cell signal outages. Moose crash hot zones. Every morning, we untangled our weary bones from the mosquito net to resume the ongoing discussion. Should we turn back? For me, the question was complicated. True, this was a dangerous and uncomfortable place, but thinking of ways to die, all of us at once, me first, then him, Pico first, me second, Jim last, him, me, then poor, poor Pico last. This is what I do. Imagining death by explosion, landslide, tidal wave, asphyxiation, anaphylaxis. It's a thing I picked up as a child while living in southern Italy on an infant volcano which occasionally burped plumes of lethal gas. I know. I should have turned my talent into a career as a worst-case scenario specialist, but instead, I use it to torture myself. Thinking the horrible doesn't make me risk-avoidant. It just gives me a tummy ache and annoys those around me. Over the years, Jim has adapted to my hair-raising projections, which may have saved our lives a few times. The occasional close shave, near miss, or narrow escape inspire gratitude for every breath we can grab on this beautiful, bloodthirsty planet. Here on the crispy, thin Alcan, my powers had purpose. This is a place where the circle of life is not just a song. It's a region where creatures readily sense the sharp edges of their existence. Heaven and nature kill. And on the Alcan, that heavy-duty thought is red-flagged at all times. My quirky skill set had found purpose. At my request, Jim would have turned the rig around at the first available opportunity, whether he wanted to or not. That is a sacred Living in Beauty pact. There were days on the Alcan where we both felt we were out of our depth. But Jim is an advanced guy. For him, problems are like oxygen. We would press on, like a moving target, if necessary. In the end, the Alcan made the decision for us. Turning south was out of the question when the road closed behind us. It was all the talk among the soakers at Laird River Hot Springs. A few days earlier, we had crossed the very spot where a flash flood busted the road into. With water still rising from the spring thaw, we pulled out of Laird onto the Alcan, heading toward Watson Lake. The Watson Lake Visitor Information Center kindly allowed us to dry camp in their parking lot. With a region-wide cell service outage, which had nothing at all to do with flood or fire, we needed the complimentary Wi-Fi. Though the signal was weak, we were able to connect with family, attend to the Living in Beauty blog, and confirm campground reservations up the road. Meanwhile, we explored the legendary Signpost Forest. The visitor center staff provided supplies and a craft area to design our personal contribution. The next morning, we continued west toward Teslin, Yukon. The constant drizzle cleared the stench of wildfire smoke from the north. Yukon is a great watery paradise made of a million minor paradises. The territory is named for the river, which flows nearly 2,000 miles through mostly untouched wilderness, beginning at the McNeil headwaters and turns west toward the Bering Sea. The Yukon converges with the Tanana and Klondike rivers and countless tributaries. These waterways are the glories among thousands of impressive lakes, streams, and islands that go unnamed. The Tees, Yukon, larger than life, did not prepare us for the grandeur of this vast wilderness in Canada's smallest territory. With riverbanks overflowing, it was no surprise to find the charming village of Teslin in a state of emergency and our campground underwater. The local authorities kindly allowed us to park in the rest area on the hill. The view of the village below, backdropped by mountains, changed constantly in the shifting light. Yukon takes beauty to a whole new level. We stayed in Teslin for only 2 days. The dangerous water was not safe for the kayaking we'd planned. Fortunately, the George Johnston Museum was open. We didn't know what to expect from the film, but picturing a people made us feel as if we'd been let in on a secret. The lovingly preserved archive of art, antiques, garments, handwork, and photos told the story of a visionary artist whose dedication to his work continues to influence generations of villagers. We pulled out of Teslin with more respect for this land and for the resilience of the community and for the strength of stories shared. Following the signs, we detoured south about 100 miles to beautiful Atlin, British Columbia. There, we settled in beside the lake, a short walk from downtown Atlin, where everyone knows your dog's name. We came for kayaking, but there's more. We visited the little fire truck that didn't save the town, and some cool boats. Neat old stuff like that. Atlin doesn't take its long-lost boomtown history all that seriously. This town is progressive. There's no cell service or Wi-Fi, but it's not about turning back the clock. It's about making room for peace and quiet and serenity. But don't be surprised if you have a great shopping experience in paradise. You definitely don't want to miss Atlin Mountain Coffee Roasters. Atlin is probably one of the most beautiful places on earth to meditate, write a poem, draw, or just stare at that tranquil lake. If we ever go dark, you just might find us in Atlin. Next morning, starting early, we followed our detour back to the Alcan. Wildlife viewing was always best on the side trips. That morning, we left one of the least populated hamlets in British Columbia and entered the territorial capital, Whitehorse, Yukon. Big town, big stores. We were desperate for tactical gear. Herbal repellents are enough in the lower 48, but not here, where the mosquitoes train in terrorist camps. Our first stop in Whitehorse was to explore solutions at the Real Canadian Superstore. The locals set us right up and invited us to attend the Canada Day parade and festivities. Special events continued throughout the day. To live in subarctic Whitehorse, you must be sturdy and resourceful. But when the going gets tough, Yukoners go to Nordic Eclipse Hot Springs. Newly renovated and only a short walk from our campground, a paradise of relaxation awaited us. Formerly known as Tahkeeny Hot Springs and famous for the deep freeze hairdo competition, Eclipse Nordic Hot Springs opened the new facility to the public only 2 weeks before we arrived. We were two lucky chichacos. Sometimes we had it all to ourselves. As the region-wide cell service outage continued, hanging out at Eclipse kept us informed. Word from other soakers was the Klondike Highway, north to Dawson City, was closed due to wildfires. And the Alcan was closed to the south, the way we came. Immediately, the store shelves emptied. We moved camp to the city to wait out the fires and position for a possible evacuation. The Real Canadian Superstore parking lot provided refuge for 2 days. In this stressful situation, it was a comfort to be near vital services. The delay also opened a window of opportunity for a paddle on the Yukon River at Lake LaBarge. Yes, Robert Service fans, that Lake LaBarge. The following morning, the Klondike Highway to Dawson City still remained closed. Jim, following a trickle of news reports, calculated that if we reached the closure point 175 miles up the road, chances were good we'd arrive as the road opened. For 330 miles, we drove through fires and blinding smoke, weaving through torturous detours. And we made it. Like a letter in a bottle, Dawson City is a fragile remnant of a passionate moment in time when the streets were overflowing with gold seekers. On a picturesque slope overlooking the mudflat confluence of the Klondike and Yukon rivers, the city was established in the traditional territory of the Trondek-Wechen. In the summer of 1895, the population held at 200 mostly Han-speaking people. The next summer, over 40,000 stampeders arrived in the largest mass migration in the shortest period of time in North America. One can only imagine what it was like for the indigenous people to see their simple village become, literally overnight, a cosmopolitan Western city with gold-fevered white people usurping their land. 4 years later, as the Klondike gold rush wound down, the surviving stampeders dispersed, leaving the city frozen in time. A fever cooled. You can't blame them for packing out. Even with the piping hot red light district, it's cold in them thar hills. After dinner and a show, we wandered over to the Sourdough Saloon. This is an authentic watering hole where patrons are challenged to kiss the nasty toe, an amputated appendage surrendered by some unfortunate Yukoner for this dark duty, lying in state at the bottom of a whiskey tumbler. For 50 years, you think you know a man. Then, the spell of the Yukon, or the midnight sun, or the local Appalachians, or all three, most likely, do their sinister work. Jim cozied up to the challenge, positioning himself in line, ready to throw his money on the table. Then, like magic, a parable leapt off my tongue, snapping my beloved out of it. Men who play footsies with cannibalism sleep in the dredge. Jim cooled his curiosity by watching from the sidelines while I lingered on the porch, focused on keeping that nice supper down. Next morning, we were off to board the George Black, a teeny tiny ferry which is supposed to navigate our party of three and our 9,000-pound rig across the rapidly rising Klondike during a thunderstorm, while Jim nurses a hangover. Pico, him, me, Pico, him. Thank you for joining us at Living in Beauty. If you like this post and want to be notified when a new one is released, please enter your email address and click the follow button at the bottom of this page. For more info, check out our travel maps and facts. Okay, that's it for now. Safe and happy travels. Until next time.